November 22, 2021, Swap for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Swap for Pedro show. Started off with Black Pearls from John Coltrane. Then Paranoid Time. Botched Mutilation. Paranoid Time reminds me of the name of the first Minutemen album.
Yeah, it's a familiar.
Well, you can tell people. And not Man Alone Mode because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Patrick Yankee with me. Welcome aboard, Patrick.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Mike. I'm super excited to be here.
And we got to give the big, big, big thanks to Blake Edwards for the connect, correct?
Thank you, Blake.
Yeah, bitch. Where are you talking to me from, Patrick?
I'm in Mattawan, Michigan right now.
Okay.
It's where I live with my family, with my two kids, my wife.
Sure. Now, if I was there with you in person, you'd show me your starboard hand, and right? All Michiganders do that to let you know where they live, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you're looking at it, yeah, it's like the lower, I don't know, what would you say, lower left?
I'd say underneath the ring finger or the pinky finger towards the wrist.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, we're just outside of, Mattawan is just outside of Kalamazoo. Kalamazoo is about halfway between
right.
Detroit.
When you're going across state there, that's right in the middle place. I played the school there and stuff, State Theater in the... There's a college, right? Central.
Yep, Western. Yep.
Western,
did you play? Was it Firehose?
It might have been there.
Yeah.
I know there's a border change before you get to Grand Rapids. Brother Steve lived in another time zone than you.
Yes, it changes time zone
right
there.
Right.
Yeah.
Now. Let's talk about your journey through music.
Okay. Cool.
Earliest memory, recollection that you still contain.
Thank.
Remember, so it's a Wild World Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
No, I mean, I'm just like, I was thinking about this because I know kind of the format, right? So I was like thinking of my earliest recollection of music has to do with is when my folks were still together. So I must have been a little kid. I was a real little kid. But they went to this party with like other, you know, adults. And there's some kids, and it was going to be late, right? So me and my brother, they're like, okay, you guys got to go sleep in this other room. And we slept. They put us where we had to sleep was right next to like where they had the stereo. And I remember like falling asleep, like right next to this giant stereo speaker. And I remember like this guy, like it just as I was like falling out, this guy like just laughing like that kid's going to fall asleep right next to the speaker because it was like blasting. And I was able to just like fall asleep to this like loud, whatever they're playing, Boston or whatever it was. And I wonder like I think back on that and I wonder if that was like, did that influence, you know, cause everything, my taste in music tends to just lean towards louder and more extreme. So, I wonder if that was just like part of that coming out just like at an early stage. Like I can fall asleep next to a stereo speaker that's turned up loud enough for the party type thing.
Something we did when we just getting driver's license and drove to the airport, LAX here, Volkswagen Bug. And, you know, different kind of security. So we weren't really at the airport on the field with the runway and all that shit, but we're right outside the fence and we'd lay there on our, sometimes we'd be tripping balls, right?
Right.
And the airplane's taking off right over you. You could feel the heat and the sound.
Yeah.
You could scream your fucking brains out. Couldn't hear anything. It'd be a total mind blow. It'd fill up your whole vision, your whole sensory. Oh man.
So
maybe
cool.
It's something similar to that. The other thing he lit off some stuff in Watt's head was Boston, because I remember in that record, it's like a guitar with a city spaceship or some shit.
Yeah, that thing, yes.
Okay,
yes.
But the same, yep. I remember when that came out here at the record store, Pedro Redwood Records, television, Marquee Moon.
Yes.
And I just graduated in high school, 76. Yeah, that's trippy. So thank you for bringing a memory to me, too, Pat. So this pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
Growing up, so nobody was like a serious musician, but there were things like my mom had, she had an auto harp. So, so she would just sit there and just wail away on that auto harp sometimes when the mood struck. So, I don't know, maybe that's where some of like, I don't know, when I'm talking about these memories of being like a kid and this stuff come, it makes me think of like, so how did that then, you know, make me turn out like for what I like? So I'm thinking maybe that's where the punk rock bit came through because it's just like simple, like one, like chord, like she's pushing a button, she's wailing like super hard and making these chords and making these little songs. So she'd do that.
Maybe more passion than technique.
Yeah. All passion and very little technique. So, she played that. My stepdad was in he was in a band when he was in a high school called the Moon Glows. But I don't remember him ever, he must have just stopped. Cause by the time we knew him, I never really saw him play guitar or anything like that. But I remember seeing pictures of him in a band, the rock band. And then,
well, let me ask you about school. Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I couldn't do any of that. Okay. Played record for a little
you
bit.
Even when tried, did the school have a program? You know, some schools don't even have a fucking program.
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
They did. I don't know what prevented. My brother got into the band. He played trombone, but.
All right. That's some bass left. Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. So So I don't know what made me just miss. I just missed that.
What about as a listener? What was the first record you bought with your own money?
First record I bought with my own money was the Devo Whip It 45.
And first gig you saw?
First gig I saw would be David Lee Roth. David Lee Roth with Poison opening up for them. So the first live band, the first live band I ever saw was Poison.
And
that was an amazing show because,
I think David Lee Roth might have had Billy Sheehan on bass for that.
You did. That was when he had the two. Then who was the other? Who was the
Steve Vai.
Steve Vai was on guitar, and then that was the one where he was riding, he got on the surfboard and flew up into the rafters and flew all the way around. I mean, that's how I remember it anyways. He flew, got up and flew over the crowd into a boxing ring, and then he boxed. So it was just this over the top spectacle, and just set the bar kind of high for well, shit, this is what a concert is like. Awesome. You know?
First one I saw was, it was with Devo, and it was T-Rex.
Oh, T-Rex. Nice.
Yeah, I didn't have any surfboard. Well, everybody in Pasadena surfs. What's wrong with me?
But not at the show.
No, that is, if you know SoCal, Pasadena is about 30 miles from the water. It's in the foothills.
Okay, but everyone surfs there?
Yeah, nobody. That's a joke. I guess that's an inside joke. So then, the shit, not after graduating, but in the afternoon, the basement band, the garage band, a bedroom band, you didn't do that stuff then?
No, we didn't. I didn't do that. But I would go over to my neighbor's house, and those guys were a little bit older, and so that's where I first ran into Black Sabbath. You know, I remember the Born Again album coming out, and then those guys
being super.
Yeah, exactly. And those guys being super into that. He had that Ted Nugent album too, where the guy had where his arms were growing into the guitar. You know which one I'm talking about? It was like a gatefold thing.
I remember the title, but I remember seeing that.
Yeah, so that hard rock, this hard rock, heavy metal sort of thing, and that's what I can really remember, starting to shit, this is cool, I had the Devo record, and that was awesome, and I still to this day love Devo.
Did you want to do any of that stuff, the bass or the drum or guitar?
Yeah, probably, I did, but I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody that was doing that.
Those dudes, they were just listeners?
Yeah, they're just listeners.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
sometimes, especially with older brothers, something that people like Pete, get to watch the band and stuff. And
I wish.
A lot of the guests I've had on the show lately with experimental music seem to be the younger sibling.
Interesting.
I just started noticing it. Everybody's talking about the oldest. Older brother, older sister record collections having a big influence or some musical kind of connect.
I was off on, I was the older one, and then I was kind of just off on my own, figuring the shit out and exploring.
Yeah, us three Minutemen were all the oldest one, too, so not everybody's like that. You gave me this, some more Paranoid type Station of Mutilation. Let's listen.
Let's do it.
creation. I landed in the safety net. Of discipline uncomplicated, tears roll so gently, it's an aid. Which takes time to breaking away. The door and the day are wide open, wide open. Soon I'll need what springtime wide open, wide open.
for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off Paranoid Time, Station of Mutilation. Then Few from her brand new record, New Decade, Doing Nothing. That's a title. Neil Turpin, drummer man out of Leeds, England, but his solo record where he plays everything, Neil. Great band, Bilge Pump, he plays drums for. The Door in the Day. Then brand new from Helvetia, The Strange Pull. Trippy Way, it sounds like almost a different band on each side. Or that Velvet, Lady Godiva's Operation or something. Bob Buckle Jr. and Sam Locke Ward, their new album they did together, Mapping the Way. And then Trouble Cova Kushnepeshi with Alida, or leader, I guess, in Slovene. That's a little phonetic, or looks a little phonetic. And Lagoon Monster Rubber Mask Volume 4, Part A2, brand new from Bronze Age UFO out of Baltimore. Finally, Paranoid Time. There's a body at the end of my driveway.
That's a true story, by the way.
Yeah, explain.
I used to live at this house. It was unique because it was in town, right? But on three sides of it was a park. It was woods. So it was I don't know if it was protected, if it was like a city park or what it was. But it was also at the top of this hill. So we're really close to the main city, but super accessible. Suddenly you're just at this place that's very private. So one day we were coming home, driving home from, we're at the store or whatever it was, and there's fire trucks and there's cop cars all up and down, in the front of my driveway, off the street to get that. I was like, well, what the fuck happened? Is my house on fire? We get up there and somebody had dumped a body, it was 20 feet from the end of my, there was some poor person's, corpse at the end of my driveway.
Had to write a song about it.
Better write a song about it. The thing that was weird about it is that, I know that that night prior, whenever this must have happened, we had this, bay window and I could look out into the forest and I used to set up my shit and my gear and just do some recording and just look out into the night, the night forest and whatnot. I was doing that the night before. I just it's weird. It was weird. It was super strange. And then, better write a song about it because there you go. How many times is that going to happen? Hopefully once. I'm going to say hopefully once.
Let me ask you about the tape recorder. As a teenager, did you use it like an instrument?
Well, not as a teenager necessarily. Through my own, doing the Paranoid Time stuff, I certainly did.
Yeah, I know. You can tell that, but I'm on what led up to that.
We kind of, as a teenager, we would do things me and my stepsister, we would do fake radio, fake radio show, right? So we'd record a song off the radio, but then we'd record ourselves being the DJs, right? And then pause it and then record the song off the radio and then pause and then do the DJ part in between. So I guess we're kind of using it as an instrument or at least a tool to do our own little game with the thing. So I think that's, I think that qualifies.
So that's kind of your first composing and stuff?
I would say so. Yeah, sort of piece it together. Yeah, I guess we're composing stuff. It was supposed to be a little radio play kind of in a way. We'd do voices and interview, people and stuff like that.
And so it seems like you repurpose stuff for your music, right? What, grinders? Chainsaw?
somewhat a lot of different stuff I use for source sounds.
Yeah.
Well, for a lot of the stuff I use, scrap metal, a lot of scrap metal. For a long while, I was playing a machete. So I had a contact mic, all taped up the machete, and then plugged those into distortion and then just smash away at different pieces of scrap metal or take chains and smash those
what
things.
What gave you the notion? Who's the sensei, the mentor?
I guess it's probably, if not necessarily, monkey see, monkey do. It's just people, and always trying to take it one step higher than what you see other guys doing, right? So I knew, Neural, for instance, has these metal sculptures that he utilizes and uses that almost exclusively for his sound sources. fuck, I want to do something like that. It's like, but I can't do the exact same thing. So I had this machete that I got when we were down in Mexico. It had this inscription on the blade that said O.J. Simpson Special Edition. Jeez. And I was like, this is going to be – I was waiting for, like, this thing had a purpose in my life at some point. So it turned out to be use it for recordings, and I toured with it and played a bunch of shows with it and whatnot. It kind of I had a lot of fun with it, doing the noise and shit like that. But, yeah, it's just me trying to, like, one-up what I was seeing other people doing.
Okay, you said your first gig was David Lee Roth and some kind of corporate rock kind of thing. So it seems mm-hmm. like there must have been another gig that kind of steered you this way. And so,
oh, fuck yeah.
Because you didn't end up dressing up like that guy and fake riding surfboards. And
no,
but
man.
But you
didn't get
into this scene. So what? Who was the fucking connect?
Dude. Yeah, it was, there's a very specific show for that. In the summer between me graduating and then, going to Western Michigan, University, in Kalamazoo, I met a friend, at orientation, and he, and his big brother lived, you know, went to Western and had a band here and everything. So, he was plugged into the scene. And he's like, dude, you got to come down. So we had orientation, then I went back home, and then we're going to go back to school in a couple weeks. But in between then, there was a gig. It was the band called The Cows.
Oh, yeah, great band.
And the Godbully. And the Godbully.
Kevin played bass with the Slides.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. And these guys, Cows and Godbullies, and it was a record release show for both of the bands, right? They both were coming out with records on AMREP. And I didn't, you know, I told you, I went to, like, David Lee Roth. I went to another show that I saw prior to that was AC/DC, which was phenomenal, amazing. But, like, I had no idea that this kind of weird
underground.
Shit,
you didn't know about that underground.
Yeah, and you know, scary but funny, and
yeah, of course,
just rocking in a way that was just so sick and beyond what I kind of comprehended. My brain was rewired that night, and I think it's to this day those front, like Shannon Selberg for the Cows.
Yeah, Shannon.
Mike Hard of the Godbullies. Those guys still influence the way I approach making any kind of music.
Yeah, the band after, right? The Heroin Sheiks, I think.
Heroin Sheiks, yeah. Heroin right. Sheiks. I don't know if they're doing stuff, but yeah, great bands. Great bands.
Kevin lives in SoCal. In fact, I was playing a pad. He was the doorman in Los Feliz and the Happy. But, yeah, what did Jake Rodriguez, I mean, he's a Bay Area guy, but he said, he called it the costume noise scene.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, every little breed and area. What was the school, the club? Club Soda?
Club Soda. Wow, nice, yeah.
My memory, yep. You know, I'm always
that's exactly
down.
It.
Okay.
Did you guys play there?
Yeah,
I played there.
And State Theater, I think, shared the stage with the Melvins.
When they State Theater.
They had a woman bass player, so it's that era of that
yep.
thing.
I think I was probably at that show.
Okay. And, shit. So, it was that gig. And those guys, I mean, Cows were kind of bass, guitar, drum. I mean, it was wild the way they did it. But they weren't using the machetes and electronics so much.
No. It was just, it was wild rock. It was just wild rock.
Yeah.
You know?
No, the aesthetic, right? And the attitude and the feeling. And
the attitude. Yeah. He came out. I remember, Shannon had like two, he had like, I, in my mind, he had two broken arms. He probably just
oh,
had one.
Oh, yeah, and I know the story behind that.
Right? Oh.
Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit. We're at the end of the first hour, November 22, 2021. This Wap Pedro Show special guest, Patrick Yankee. Hold tight for hour two.
That's
November
fucked up.
November 22, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wap Pedro Show.
We'll be right back. emotions. It takes dedication. It takes dedication. It takes a death. And only God can allow it. And you couldn't do it if you're not the seed of God. And so the path and the great corridors, these are corridors unto his perfection, that is, which the prophet, the Urim and Thummim, has penetrated, that through this gray sea of blackness that I penetrated through these corridors, and I went through that last segment where I went through these dark serpentines. I passed through that corridor where they sat, where they are. And when you penetrate to the Most High God, you will believe you're mad. You will believe you've gone insane. But I tell you, if you follow the secret window and you die with ego nature, you will penetrate this darkness. Oh yes, there is many a man or woman that's been put in the same asylum, and this has happened to them. And they're sitting there today, people think they're insane. But they saw something that's real. And they see it when they're on drugs. The only thing is they see it not through the light of God. The way I showed you, I showed you to see it through the light of God and the understanding of God. Because when you see the face of God, you will die. And there will be nothing left in you except the God man, the God woman, the heavenly man, the heavenly woman, the heavenly child. There'll be prayer on your lips day and night. There'll be a song of jubilee waiting for your king. There will be nothing you will be looking for in this world, excepting for your God. This is all a dream of death. And so I went through that with you. I encountered hell, the great serpentines of the higher quarters. And I went through that when I showed you chart in the history. The question is asked in and summon concerning the source. This horrible thing is a mighty way. If Worm and Summon can ask me a question, if it asks from the right being or the right soul out of Worm and Summon, I can give you unspoken word that's never been spoken, none. Thank you.
second hour start off with Vinny Vincent.
Yes.
We got a guy in Pedro here that goes by the name Vinny Vegas. So maybe related. Paranoid time. Then guys feed ye Black Emperor with Static after that. Big tunes from that man. Paranoid Time with Rat Tail 2000. So do you remember the first gig you did in front of people?
I do. It was a basement show. Well, yeah, for Paranoid Time, it was this basement show.
Or just Patrick Jenkins. You mean Paranoid Time was your first proj?
Yeah, it was my first noise thing, but I was in a few punk rock bands, you know, like, standard punk rock type bands before that. But for Paranoid Time, it was...
What were you playing in those bands?
I was, like, vocalist, so I was, like, front man.
All right.
Yeah, you know, so that was fun. Paranoid Time...
I'll tell you about being a front man.
All right.
The advantages over being in a power trio. When they're spitting on you, you can block with your hands.
And that's right.
Yeah, well, me and D. Boone had to work the fucking basic guitar, so they're spitting right in your mouth.
You'd catch it in your mouth.
Yeah, right. Okay, go on with the dirt. Yeah. So you always hankered after your position in the band.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. The first gig I played with, the first gig I did as a front man with, it was this band called Fatty 2x4, and we thought it'd be funny to... it was just stupid shit. We thought it'd be funny to get like out pimento loaf and throw that out at the crowd as we were playing. And then, I remember, climbing up, but like just doing just dumb shit, like anything I could think of, you know, like just to like be obnoxious, climbing up on top of the PA and jumping off. And broke my toe and twisted my ankle, just acting like a fucking ass. But it was fun. It was good times. But the first Paranoid Time gig I just had no idea what I wanted to do really. So I was like, well, I'll get all these boom boxes. And so I got like four boom boxes. Like I'm going to make like a quadraphonic stereo experience. And so I got these boom boxes and like put them around in the basement. And then, I just had some like tape players and a mic and I just hit play on everything. So it was just. And then I like ran around the room with a mic, like trying to do like it was just totally unlike anything it eventually evolved to be. But it was.
Was it different stuff on each boombox? Because didn't Flaming Lips? They did something.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Flaming Lips did something like that. I can't say that it was a highly original idea. It was like me trying to. I think I was trying to create some sort of like sound experience. It was all different. Yeah, it was all different shit on each boombox.
Yeah.
But, you know, then when you go like put the main stuff through the PA, you can't hear anything on the boomboxes anyway. So it didn't.
Right.
I did all this work. I did all this planning and I was like, this is going to be, this is going to blow people's minds, man. And it did not. It was just like me running around with a microphone and the feedback and whatnot. So, you know, eventually, didn't really progress much from there in the next 15 years. So,
but what was the reaction? Do you think the gig was a success?
Yeah, it was fun. Like people, I don't know if it was like, you know, this goes back to like that frontman vibe where you just like you make it work and you interact. Like all you have to do a lot of times with these underground shows is just. Interact at least a little bit with the audience. Don't act like you're scared.
Yeah.
And it works. So like, even though it sounded like shit, you know, the way I was like running around and like interacting with people and stuff, like, I don't know, maybe they were laughing at me, but they were doing something. They enjoyed it. It seemed like, and I had a good time. So it allowed me to keep going and like make it better.
And, between you and the gig goers was in a Grand Canyon. And that's always been a good thing about the movement, I think. You know, especially compared to arena rock, I remember seeing the Germs, you know, and they get done playing it, and Pat Smear's standing right next to me. And the dude who was standing next to me, now he's up there playing. That was not like arena rock. That was not like David Lee Roth in the Surfboard.
It was not. No. It's very much of the people, right?
Yeah,
like you're the crowd is the show, right? I mean, and we all know, like, how many times have we played a gig where the crowd is the other bands.
Right. You gave me Dead by Dawn. Let's listen. Dead by Dawn.
So the Heskey gun, and they came from outer space and they landed in the night. And they used their superpowers to gain control. And they came from outer space. And we never seen it coming. We had no time to run away. We could not stop the unstoppable, could not stop the onslaught from happening. And I ran to tell Mary, I ran to tell John, ran to tell Lisa. I ran and ran, ran to tell Jimmy, ran to tell Tom, ran to tell Philip, ran to tell Sam, ran to tell Luke, ran to tell Margaret. Boom, boom, boom. We had to do something. And they came from outer space. They landed in the night. They used their superpower to gain control. They came from outer space. And we were running out of time. And we saw them in the sky. We tried our best. We could. We could not stop the onslaught. I ran to tell Mary, ran to tell John, ran to tell Lisa. I ran and ran. I did all I could. But I could not stop it. Could not stop the onslaught. They came from outer space. They landed in the night. They used their superpowers to gain control of us, of the world, of the earth. They came from outer space. We tried our best to stop them, but how can you stop the unstoppable? You can't. I couldn't. You can't. I couldn't. I just couldn't. Doing the unexpected.
Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with Paranoid Time doing Dead by Dawn. Then Bombas Prendon, Black, Blue, and White. Chad Fair, I couldn't. Got to share stage with him last week. Denton, Texas. Oh, no. Broke his guitar. Yeah.
You did?
No, I didn't. I was using a guy named Dave's bass. That's the thing about a Fender, you know. You don't have to travel on the plane. I really didn't know what the airport was going to be like. I'm so glad people were cool and not being assholes.
Oh, where was it?
It was Denton, Texas, and we flew into Dallas-Fort Worth, Long Beach.
There was a festival or something there last week.
Right, it was called Unhinged. In fact, Victoria Shen came and joined us on a Stooges tune. She had stylus on each. She had four styluses, each glued to a fingernail, and she had three records like all laminated together. It was a trip, but the PA man didn't put her in the fucking monitor, so she was miming.
What?
Yeah, like you did all that preparation at that gig, right?
Yeah.
Shit happens like that. I think what you call it does. Pilot error, right? Okay, tell me about composing. Do you have voice memos? Do you make demos? Do you have a collection of idea, lyric book? What?
Yeah, it's the way I approach it is I'm trying to get the right amount of source sound. So a lot of times is spent experimenting and trying out different ideas for source sound. So like I might record me, and it sounds so dumb, but I mean, this is what a lot of it is, right? Like I record like dragging a rake around the garage, right? Like I'm dragging it on the concrete floor,
yeah.
And then do that for like a fucking hour. And then I can feed that through like, you know, all the effects pedals and then shit like, so part of what goes into the recording style too is like, I don't use a multi-tracker. I'll record one track and then I'll take that tape. And if I'm going to do a multi-track thing, I'll take that tape, put it in a deck and play that in through one channel, the mixer, and then record on top of that. And then that'll, you know, then I result with two tracks and I take those two tracks on that one tape and put that again. And if I'm going to do a third track and whatnot. So like it starts to build up this like,
sure.
I don't know.
Layers it up like a parfait or some shit.
Super saturated.
Patrick. So in a way, your pieces are a result of the sounds that you find. Like the initial thing is to find a trippy sound, right? What do you call it? A source.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And
right.
The source kind of points the way that the piece is going to go.
That's exactly right. Okay. Yeah. And then it's just like up to the individual, like who's ever making it, like, you know. The process I'm talking about, I think, is probably pretty similar for most people. Maybe it's not. Then it's up to, like, that's how do I put it together, right? Then I'll edit it on the machine, on the computer, and, you know, EQ it and stuff on there. But all of the initial recording is just done on cassette tape and bouncing it from one track to the next. And you're right. It's like find a cool sound, first of all, and then once you get that, then you're off.
Yeah. So... And like, what, you just take a look, like in the garage, hey, there's a rake, garage floor, and start getting all Einstein on this shit.
Sometimes it's dumb chance. It's like, oftentimes it'll be like whatever's in your surroundings, right?
Right. Well, you know what, in a way, that's kind of like the way I do photography. I don't set up shots, I just have the camera ready. I call them gifts, right? He's just, you know what I mean?
Right.
Just especially a bird or something like that. You can't set that shit up, but you got to be ready for when the thing comes, the moment comes. Yeah. So you got a little more control. But at the end of the day, right, people only hear what's getting in their ear holes. So it's like, you know, Frank Morgan in that Wizard of Oz, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right.
If you, like, do you list stuff like on the credits? Like, yeah, I played the rake on that garage track. You don't, right? You just give the pieces and the people have to assume.
I don't necessarily describe, unless that's part of the idea. Sometimes I'll get stupid and I'll be like, talk about like all the different pieces.
I think
the
machete was pretty good.
Yeah, the machete is pretty, but you can't miss that. But like, I'll just say something like, I played the broken glass or what, you know, whatever. Like, just like, if you want to be just obnoxious, it's more obnoxious to like describe it, right?
There's a cat in Sydney, Australia, Lucas Abella. He plays
Lucas Abella. Yeah,
he plays
Lucas.
He's a broken glass. glass in his mouth.
That guy is amazing. Have you seen that? Have you seen him do that?
YouTube.com stuff. We're at the end of the second hour, November 22, 2021, Dishwap Pedo Show. Special guest Patrick Yankee. Hold tight for hour three.
November 22, 2021, it's the third hour of the Pedro Show.
Okay.
Pedro Show. Start off the third hour. Paranoid Time doing Sick Tale. And this is the part of an animal, not the spiel kind of thing. Spelled different. It's one English thing. At least they give you some clue. It's a different fucking... But past tense of reading, and then the color. I mean, why they... Yeah. And then, yeah. Then, you know... Yeah, you got to know the context, because it's spelled exactly the same way if it's in the past. Okay, enough belly aching. Sorry, people. Head Boggle, Song of the Islands, and then Paranoid Time, 420 Brother Side A. We're off air. People are talking about the Lucas Abella's incredible pushing boundaries of this thing, and Patrick's actually saw him, and your first release. You were saying something about a label. You got a label.
Yeah, I ran a label called Scratch and Sniff Entertainment, and the first CD that we put out was by this band called Mechanic, or a performer who went by the name Mechanic. And the CD that we pressed was facilitated by Lucas through some pressing plant in Australia. You started talking about Lucas, and I was like, ah, man, yeah, I know him. And it was like 20 years ago that we did that.
Yeah, so, when I started doing the Watt from Pedro show.
Yeah, at the same time, I was talking to the glass blower.
Right. It's a shard, people. This ain't like,
it's a shard.
It's got edges on it. He's cutting his mouth with some kind of contact mic on, or I don't know. It's really ingenious.
It's very pro wrestling. I love it.
My favorite pro wrestler was Don Morocco.
The Magnificent
I was the guy who came up with the fucking body slam. You know, I almost had a moment there like the Rocky Python when they asked the motherfucker's favorite color and he gets it wrong. Right? Blue, no brown. Ah, yeah.
Morocco, damn it.
Yeah. No, Don Morocco. I love that guy. And especially his spiels for the Beast.
Yeah. I was super into Macho Man.
Okay, and the other guy I like was Terry Funk. He's one
Terry
of
Funk. The Funk. Yeah, it doesn't get more real than Terry Funk.
Yeah, I mean, like the spit tobacco down the chin and on the chest, and then you get your ass branded when he beats you.
Dude, yeah, he was like an actual like you were actually in a fight. Right?
Yeah, the dude probably flosses with razor wire. Yeah. Look, speaking of which, Paranoid Time, Wired, let's listen.
Yeah. I'm
Watch for Pedro Show. Start out, last music for this edition. Paranoid Time of Wired. I got a congrats on the Sagui there. SLWCC Watt, my collab project with Sam Lockward out of Iowa City with Mindless. Made a cassette with like 60 songs. It's like 10 minutes long. All these tiny ass songs. He had me do rap and bass. but really interesting. Guy's very creative. That draws a lot of comics too. Paranoid Time. Finally, Pregnant Nun Side B. So this side A, side B. What? These are like whole sides of cassettes or albums.
Yeah. It's just a It was like, so I didn't have a specific title for it. It was just the B side of that particular tape. Pregnant Nun.
Right. And so how long did the label go?
I think we stopped, wrapped it up about 2010. So it's, like hard to say like when it started, maybe 99-ish to about 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what about these days? You got a Bandcamp page?
Yeah, I do. Yep. You can find Paranoid Time. I think it's Paranoid Time HN. Yeah, or you can search it, search Bandcamp. Or I can send you the link. I got that. I got my stuff up on Spotify. And
is
all,
there
you know,
a Patrick Yankee website?
No, I don't have that anymore. Okay, okay. I used to have snsc.net for the label, but yeah, there's not.
Tell me about collabs. Cause you gave me all Paranoid Time stuff. Does Paranoid Time ever collaborate?
I've done it a couple times, but, I suck at it because, I'm just so burly, you know, with what I'm doing. Yeah. Like it just ends up just being I stomp all over what the other, there's no subtlety, there's no collab. It's just like all my shit, you know, super loud over what the other guy's trying to do. Right. So it doesn't really work out, but I've done a few things that, I tried it.
Let me see if I understand. Like if I was going to pick a metaphor, it'd be like, two linemen facing each other before the hike.
Yeah. Or like, an artist and a monkey or something.
Okay.
You know, like I'm just like, like I've got like one mode. Right. And then, but you know, in order to like do a proper collaboration, there's gotta be like some give and take. And like, you guys are.
What I've come to understand and listening. Right? Because you're trying to make a conversation. Unless it's going to be like competing monologues. Maybe that's what you're talking about.
That's what I'm kind of doing, yeah. Or maybe you can relate to like, I'm thinking of it like, I don't know, these days where we're doing like so many Zoom meetings and things like that, like where you got a video of yourself. You told me to shut mine off when we started. I'm so used to doing that. And then when you're doing, you know, like you're just looking at, you end up like looking at yourself, like to see what I look like in this. You know, during this conversation, that's sort of like what I do with the collabs is like, I'm just listening to what I'm doing and rather than like listening to what we're both doing and trying to like, I don't know.
I got the notion. There's no problem with who's going to go first because you just jump on it.
Yeah, pretty much. Just jump on it and then just, you know, I can't hear what I'm doing, so I turn it up louder and to the point where it's just like, hey, dude, this is just your shit.
you know, the main point of us together is you going to try and stop me.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's kind of how it ends up going.
But you said you've done some.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's fun. Look, don't get me wrong, but it just never really works out in an interesting. It's fun to do. It's not necessarily fun to listen to.
Well, what about, like, you're talking about the situation and stuff. The kind of collab where you're not going at the same time, but you're trading files.
Ah, yeah. I'm working on some stuff like that. In fact, I've had some that I'm doing like that have gone on for years. Simply because, I don't know if it's in my, it's just not in my wheelhouse. It's not my skill set. I can't, like, I'm just, I don't know. Got a one-track mind for this stuff, so it's like if everything is just like go, you know. And somebody will give me some source material, and I need I've even asked for dudes to do, you know, like guys that I like respect and I really like their stuff, and we're pals, and it's just like, could you send me some stuff? I'm gonna try to work on. And it just comes out like just me just turning everything up to 10, and like, fuck, this doesn't sound good. This sounds like it's just static.
You know, right? like people like. Like, I'm not going to let these bananas go to waste. I'm going to make some banana cake.
And they get more and more dark
and dark, and the sugar is just
coming. That's it. That's exactly it.
You told me one of your buddies is Brett Goodsight. He sent me some, I don't know how he made it, but it was drums and some rhythm and electronics and stuff. And I just played bass to it right away. I pretended he was in the room, you know.
I think he'd be a good collaborator.
Well,
I sent
it back to him, and he says to me, "Man, I was worried because I thought I sent you some real sad stuff, and then I got this big happy." And I said, "Look, if you're doing James Jamerson on bass, it's going to be happy. It's going to be bumping, right?" But his notion, he thought he was giving me this old doom thing. I didn't feel that at all.
Oh, you did? Yeah, you interpret it as something different. Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought it was at face value. I didn't know it was full of sadness.
He's just like, let me know if it's going to be sad going to the play.
You know, he told me this after the fact because he was really surprised by my response. So in a way, I think that's kind of an interesting, you know what I mean? It's not just connecting dots. It's actually reacting to stuff that wasn't in the dynamic together before.
Well, you guys got musical talent, though. That's the difference. Like, you know, like I'm just, I'm like I said, I'm monkey with a stick, just hitting things, right?
Or looking at those, you're going to make some banana bread.
Going to make some more banana bread, yeah.
You know, just got to wait a little longer.
A little more ripe.
So,
does that monkey have feelings? I don't know.
Besides those long-term projects, do you have something coming up right now? That doesn't have to be a collab, but. Just Patrick Yank.
No, I've got this project I'm working on with a couple of pals, more of a group setting, and I'm working on not stomping all over them. It's this band called Airgun. Yeah, and we get together. We played a couple of shows. We kind of like try. I think of it like as kind of like the Dead Sea. You remember that band?
Sure.
So that's at least what like I'm shooting for, but it all ends up just like eventually being very too loud and trippy and stuff. But I'm working on that stuff with them. But in terms of like Paranoid Time stuff, I've got some things I'm supposed to be working on, but it comes and goes, the inspiration.
But thanks so much for being on the show. Big honor, Patrick. Thank you so much.
Mike, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It was an honor to talk to you.
Okay, right back. People, it's been November 22, 2021 edition. Wap Pilos, keep your powder dry.